If you're running a business right now, you're playing a game where the rules keep changing. Trade tensions, economic uncertainty, culture wars, the world is rapidly changing around us. And companies, especially independent and local businesses, are having to adapt faster than ever. That's why Mission Critical is evolving. We're diving deep with the founders, CEOs, and entrepreneurs who are navigating this chaos in real time. The ones making the tough calls, pushing through unpredictability, and proving that resilience isn't just a buzzword, it's a survival skill. How do you scale in an economy that feels like it's on shaky ground? What happens when US policy shifts send shockwaves through Canadian industries? And in a world where diversity, healthcare, and economic resilience are becoming battlegrounds, how do businesses double down instead of backing down? These are the real conversations that matter to business leaders right now. I'm Lance Chung, and this is Mission Critical. Let's get into it. There's something poetic about warmth in the cold. A fire burning in the Arctic, a story igniting in a place where breath turns to ice. At its core, storytelling is about connection. And North on North, the groundbreaking new series from Stacey Aglock McDonald and Alethea Artakook Baril, is proof that no matter where we come from, we're more alike than we are different. A comedy series co-commissioned by CBC and Netflix in association with APTN and set for global distribution this spring, this show is a landmark moment for Indigenous-led storytelling. It's a series made by and for Inuit communities, yet it carries universal themes of resilience, humor, and belonging that will resonate far beyond the Arctic. But North of North is more than just a show. It's part of a larger movement. The future of film in the North isn't just about representation on screen. It's about building an industry, an economy, and a new way forward. Right now, the Arctic is at the center of major global conversations. Governments and corporations are looking at the North for its resources, its trade routes, its potential for development. But where do Indigenous voices fit into these conversations? North of North is a cultural response to this very question, proving that the people who have always called the Arctic home should be the ones shaping its future, whether in politics, business, or in this case, film. On this episode, we talk about the power of representation, the responsibility of storytelling, and why the future of cinema and the North itself belongs to voices that have too often been overlooked. This is Mission Critical. Let's get into it.
Good afternoon, Stacey and Alethea. How are you?
We're really good. Thank you. We're really excited, really happy, and working away as usual.
Working away as usual. Oh my goodness. Well, speaking of working away, I just want to say that, you know, first off, I think North of North is one of the most important shows on TV right now, not just because of the storyline, but because of, you know, what it represents and how it also manages to have simultaneously a very distinct point of view, but also, you know, a lot of like universal themes that are captured so that people can also see themselves represented in some sort of capacity through the show, even if they aren't, you know, part of the Indigenous community. So I just want to say that it's a beautiful show and something beautiful that you've created.
That's
so amazing to hear.
Thank you so much.
You know, the show is truly breaking new ground as, you know, an Inuit-led, Inuit-told story on a scale that we haven't really seen before. But, you know, I think if we're being honest, like mainstream media hasn't had like a really, you know, has had a long history of telling Indigenous stories through like a very like colonial lens. What is like one assumption about Inuit life or storytelling that you were most eager to really shatter with this show or dispel or explore and celebrate? Like what's something that from your perspective, you're really excited as an opportunity?
I think first and foremost that we still exist in this world. You know, I think, as you said, there's so much media that's been created about us right from the beginning of the history of cinema. And from even before cinema, ethnography, there's just academia has had an obsession with us for centuries. And so there's just been so much representation of us done by outsiders. And a lot of it kind of paints us as these historical figures, like we're in the archives, we're not living and breathing today. And so that's just something that we really wanted to do with this show is to reach a global audience and just show the world that we still exist, always have. And we've been right here along with everyone all along, whether they realize it or not.
Mm-hmm. for me, all of that, but also, you know, that are, you know, while we do live in a place that many people would consider harsh and inhabitable, that it's a land that we just all absolutely love, and it's warm and it's inviting, and we love being here and we love our communities. And I think also that, you know, we're not running around in caveman-esque clothing.
Never have, actually.
Scraps of fur, like kind of like half-ass, like bended together. We actually take great pride in our clothing. And it's, you know, it's been asked a couple of times if that, you know, if the fashion on the show is heightened. And we're like, no, it's just how we dress. It's a point of pride for Inuit to make very beautiful but practical and warm parkas.
Yeah, that is definitely something that I noticed, like even from the first episode, the style perspective, but also, you know, the there's the utilitarian functional aspect, but also just like the beauty and the craft and the artistry behind it. And the other thing that, I mean, I feel like there's like so many themes and parallels of like the theme of like duality in the show that I'm like realizing just even as we're talking further, but like just also like this idea of like, you know, you mentioned like warmth and the fact that, you know, the bonds that the characters have between each other and the warmth of the characters in and of themselves, in contrast to kind of people's perception of the cold, the Arctic, like, I just think that that's such a beautiful kind of dichotomy there. You made, you know, on that note, you made the decision to shoot in Nunavut. Why was that a non-negotiable for you, and how did it really shape the production of the show?
I mean, I think for us, so much of our existence is in collaboration with our community. And while we did try to imagine a world where what if we did? What would we lose in that? And the cost was just too high in terms of, like, we wanted our land, for it to feel authentic, I think that we needed community. We needed to see our land. We needed to be immersed in it. And even when, you know, faced with the what if, like, we just knew that we wouldn't be able to tell the story that we wanted to tell if we shot it anywhere else.
Yeah, there's a type of show that could be made, you know, in a studio in Toronto with just like a B shoot of a B roll in the Arctic. There's a show that could exist like that, but it's not the show we wanted to make. There's just no way we could have done like the big crowd scenes, and there's just so much, just the background with all the authentic clothing, and like, you know, it would have been a bunch of Native people in the background from other nations, not ours, you know, in Toronto. And that's just, we wanted to make a show so specific to our home and our culture. And you really got to watch the show to see what we mean, that it just would not have been possible anywhere else.
Well, and the location.
In our view, the world is just so, it feels so epic and so big. And to shoot it in a studio down south, it would have felt small, which is exactly the opposite of how we feel about living in the Arctic in our community and whatnot. Yeah. So there's a grandness to it all.
Yeah, and the location and the environment in and of itself is kind of like a character as well, like plays such a pivotal role.
Yeah, that's a conscious choice for sure. There was a lot of, like, we had some sets built for sure, but there's a lot of location shooting, and we really consciously planned like how much interiors versus exteriors, and wherever a scene could take place outside instead of inside, we tried to do that. And we really took advantage of shooting up here,
which we kicked ourselves about sometimes, you know, after, you know, 14 hours outside in minus 34 weather, we were like, this have to be outside.
It's all for the art. But building on that, you know, one of the big plot lines in the first season really focuses around the town becoming like a research hub and fighting for funding. And, you know, beyond the show, this is something that's happening in real life. There's big discussions around land use and development and just advocacy for Indigenous control. How does this storyline resonate, or how do you think this storyline resonates with the larger discussions happening right now in the world? Because this is kind of almost like in real time in tandem, and it's like, is art imitating life? Is life imitating art? Like, it's just like, there's so much parallel right now.
Yeah, it's our reality, you know, and we wanted, while the show, I think, focuses mostly on like the personal relationships of the characters, there's a backdrop of the real world, our real lives. And, you know, we tried to find things to like build a skeleton of the show around things that felt very real to us. And that's definitely, we have a lot of researchers up here. We have a lot of scientists. We have a lot of government, military, you name it. Dog mushers. French dog mushers specifically for some reason. It just felt natural.
Yeah. We talked a little bit about, you know, the warmth that comes from the show. And a lot of that is through humor. Like, that plays such a big role in the show. How has comedy allowed you to tell kind of deeper truths about the characters, the culture, that, you know, a more serious approach might not have been, as good of a vehicle for?
Mm-hmm. Again, it kind of came down to what felt the most real to us. And so often when it's just us Inuit hanging out in a room talking about something that's really messed up, there's going to be some laughter inevitably, because there's always someone that has something to say about something that's a little bit like shocking or surprising or hilarious or ruthless or sort of thing. And I think we got to play with a lot of the comedy through characters versus, you know, situational. And I think that's what made it feel so real oftentimes, was that even if it was a tough situation or a difficult situation, it's the character and how they would respond to the situation particularly that makes it feel so real. We really wanted to make it a grounded comedy where it's like, we felt like we believe this, we buy this, this feels real to us. It's not about maximum laughs. It's about like, funny people going through some messed up situations.
Humor is an incredibly important coping mechanism, I think, for peoples all over the world. And I think it is what makes this show relatable for a lot of folks. And it's something that Inuit culturally for sure never shy away from, using humor to cope with situations that in other cultures might be deemed inappropriate.
But it is so true. Like, you know, when you think about, like, if you're coming from like a minority community, whether that's like from if you're talking about like the queer community or like the Asian community, Indigenous community, like, we use a lot of humor to kind of help us unpack a lot of like bigger things that are happening out there. And it's a great vehicle for us to kind of dissect and reflect, but also add some levity to like a lot of like heavy conversations that are happening all the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. If we only you like
never laugh. If, yeah.
If if we weren't allowed to laugh, you know, during difficult times, we'd never be able to. So it's like, you got to find joy wherever you can.
Yeah. Where did you find, what was your experience in terms of when you were creating the show and, you know, finding the balance, if anything, between making the show for the Inuit community, as well as being accessible to viewers who may know very little about Inuit culture, and kind of straddling that line between a very mass audience, but also, you know, resonating with your own community?
Yeah, we wanted to do both for sure. It's important to us that this show is something that our own community can connect with and love and feel seen by, but from the very start of this particular project, we wanted a global audience. And, you know, we've done work in the past that was very specifically for our own community. But for this project, we wanted to connect with the world and relate with the world. And, you know, we spent our lives watching television where we could relate to, you know, communities from Italy, from Korea, from Africa, like, Icelandic murder mysteries. Like, there's no reason that people can't also relate to us. So, you know, and we hadn't been able to see enough of indigenous content, but especially Inuit content specifically, that the entire world felt like they could relate to and connect to. And that's something we did very consciously with this show. And it is a balance. There are definitely situations, Stacey was pointing out yesterday, where we were like, moments where it didn't even occur to us that the rest of the world wouldn't understand a certain thing. And we're thankful to have creative partners in our producing partner, Miranda De Ponce, but also with our network partners, all three of our network partners, to point things out to us sometimes that we were like, why didn't we get this?
Yeah, that's really interesting. I guess throughout the process, like, what did you learn about yourself? And were there things that you had to like unpack for yourselves, or kind of just take a step back and to kind of, I don't even know what my question is, but like, what did you learn about yourself, and what kind of misconceptions, if any, did you have to unpack for yourselves?
Yeah, I mean, definitely, especially as, you know, Ali and I were first starting to develop this and we were writing the pilot together, you know, we'd be on collab mode in our script writing, and, you know, I'd be typing away about something, pitching a joke or writing a scene, and then, you know, we're sitting across from each other, like on our desks, collaborative writing, and she'd like start laughing, and then she'd be like, wait, do you need to talk about that? Like, does that actually, like, do we need to unpack that a little bit? And then we're like, yeah, actually, let's talk through it a little bit.
Like, I've known you for 15 years at this point, and you've never told me this about yourself. How is this possible? We're like best friends, and you've never told me this. Stacey especially has a lot of secrets. I'm a very open book. I'm an oversharer. Stacey is an undersharer. So, wow.
I don't know. I feel like this whole writing process has, like, and really having to, like, dig deep for, like, the heart of things and whatnot, like, Alethea is a natural at it, but I definitely had to do some like digging and being brave enough to share those pieces of myself, and it's been incredibly cathartic. And I do wonder now if, like, I've gone from being super secretive to being an oversharer. I do wonder about that. I'm just like, now I've got, after a season, I've gotten used to telling all the stories, no matter how crazy or how heartbreaking, or that I'm just like blah blah.
Thank God the writing room is a safe space. We trust everyone in it. And
it sounds very therapeutic in a way, and almost cathartic.
It really is. Yeah. We've got a wonderful room.
A lot of stuff. Yeah.
You mentioned just now too, like, you know, being brave enough to kind of confront some of those things and to talk about that stuff. So what has this experience taught you about bravery and courage, about speaking, you know, from your point of view, your truths, and, you know, sometimes unpacking things that you didn't even know that you wanted to unpack in the first place? Like, what has that experience taught you about Saul?
I think so. Like, I remember, like, when we first, like, launched in Canada, the fear of showing it to our community, especially, and just seeing the resounding positive reinforcement and positive commentary that was coming out of it. But even those few little pieces, which felt a little bit more intimate, like seeing, you know, someone being like, I really related to Siaya about this. And I felt like I had to do this work as well. And just seeing that, like, sometimes being so vulnerable and sometimes sharing what it feels like shame, or, and you have such an instinct to, like, cover shame and bury it and whatnot. But then once you put it out into the world, seeing how many people actually like relate to it and you're not alone in it. And it's something that so many of us carry, and it just makes you feel a lot less like it's such a way to get rid of that shame when we all get to talk about it out loud with each other and just kind of support each other and relate to each other. I think that was one of the things that really had an impact on me when it first launched.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I think for me, a couple of things. I've mostly been in documentary for 20 years. And Stacey kind of pulled me into the scripted world, both with the Grizzlies movie that we did before that, before the show, which was a much more like serious drama. And then this is my first foray into comedy, and Stacey's very much from the comedy space. So for me, it was terrifying. I never thought of myself as somebody who is funny. And so it was like, that's the scariest thing. I can try to like tell a good story and make someone cry and say something poignant. Like, I'm way more comfortable trying to do that and failing than I am trying to make someone laugh and failing at it. Like, that is one of the most embarrassing things to do. And even in the privacy of the writing room, it's kind of, when you first start, it's terrifying.
You're putting yourself out there.
Yeah, it's really vulnerable. So that was terrifying, and it's still scary sometimes, but I love it, and I'm so grateful to Stacey for pulling me into the comedy world, because it's such a joyful space to exist. And the thing I found really surprising was that like a lot of like the big, you know, beautiful things that I want to try to say to the world about who we are as a people, I don't have to hold back from that. And in fact, mm-hmm. When you make people laugh, you endear yourself to them, and like they actually open their hearts more to you. So in a weird way, a lot of like the big things I want to try to say to the world about who I am as an individual and who my family and community are almost easier to get across through comedy. And that's been a really big surprise for me.
Let's also be real. We need some more joy in this world right now. It's like a wild place right now. Like the world actually seems more like a reality show than reality shows or like comedy shows. Like it's too much. So
We really wanted to create a show that felt like a warm hug and a safe place to be mm-hmm. and exist. Like we didn't, there's so much trauma, and there's so much, like you said, harshness that's going on in the world right now. And we really consciously wanted to be a show that people could turn on and not be worried or scared for what they were in for, and that they could just watch it for comfort, for love, for joy and all of that stuff. Not to say that we don't touch on some heavier subjects, but I think we do it in a really warm and inviting way, where we tried to.
Yeah. And I think you've accomplished that. The entertainment industry, you know, has long made it difficult for Indigenous creators, people of color, women to secure major funding and backing. What were your kind of, or what were some of the systemic barriers you faced in getting the show made, or what were some of the obstacles and challenges there?
I think we've faced endless challenges for like the last 20 years of our career, but on this project, we felt extremely lucky to find partners that are extremely supportive and kind of immediately saw how big this show could be. Starting with our producing partner, Miranda DePonce, who's, you know, done all kinds of big Hollywood type projects. And, you know, she really encouraged us, pushed us to dream big for this show, for our careers. And I think pushed open and held open a lot of doors for us, and kind of validated us and our ideas. And, you know, we first approached CBC with this show, or actually with a different show initially, and it didn't go. You know, we developed a show with them that just didn't go. It didn't quite make it, but they stuck with us.
They didn't shut the door on us, which was a big thing. They were like, we'll give you guys another shot.
Give us another shot, which often doesn't happen with female creators, with Native creators, that like if you fail at something that, you know, that you're given another chance is a big deal. And so we're so grateful to mm-hmm. the CBC for giving us another shot. But when we pitched APTN and Netflix as well, we were hoping for success, but we weren't sure where it would go. But we've continuously been surprised wonderfully surprised by all of our network partners and how much they believe in the show and keep putting more into the show, and like the time, the effort, the notes, the like they care about every detail. And so it's just been kind of amazing, to be honest. And like, that's not to say our whole career has been like that, because certainly we've pitched projects in many places and, you know, had doors shut in our face, and not because our ideas weren't good, but because, you know, it's like, oh, who would care about a little Native story? You know, like it was a very different time, even 10 years ago. And so we're making this show in a very different time, but also with specific individuals at these networks that really understood what we're trying to do and how big we're dreaming.
Yeah. Yeah.
With all that said, I feel like they're, you know, because we've come from that 20 years worth of, you know, background of trying to do this and, struggling through it. You know, every second of making the show has been terrifying. Like, we thought, you know, we could lose it at any moment when we didn't get our pickup that first round with CBC. We thought that was it, and you know, the pit in our stomach, like what we felt like we blew our one shot sort of thing. And then, you know, they gave us another one. It's like, oh my god, thank god. But like, at every corner of this entire process, we were like, at any moment this could all go away. And you know, we really fought hard to protect it and make sure that we made the best show that we could,
yeah,
so that we could remain, like, deserve to continue to be here
for sure. So, I mean, like, you know, building on that, what has this experience, or what, you know, this experience of advocating for yourself, asking for opportunity, and not being kind of too discouraged about, you know, that first experience with the CBC, and being able to like push past that, what kind of advice would you give to, you know, other Indigenous storytellers and filmmakers that are looking to break through, and are having kind of similar experiences?
Mm-hmm. I think being very sure of what your story you're trying to tell. And you know, I'll give a couple of examples. Like, Stacey and I both made films entirely in our own Indigenous language that was very much for our own community. And there are certain stories you want to tell that are for your own community, and you don't want to compromise on, the way you're telling it, or
having to explain yourself, like,
yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like, if you want to make something very specifically for your community and dive deep and not have to over explain yourself to a global audience, like, that's a very different kind of show from what we're doing here, where we're consciously telling a story for the global audience. And I think knowing what you're trying to do and planning the size of your project and who's on your team, like, it just making it make sense for the thing that you're trying to do is really important. And in the very beginning of my career, I remember being asked all the time, like, what audience are you going for? And I didn't really understand the question when I was just starting out.
Like, for everybody.
Yeah. Why not? Anybody can enjoy this. But it really affects the story you're trying to tell, the audience you're speaking to. And so being really clear about that, I think, is extremely important.
Yeah. And there's some instances where having like a very singular point of view for your community is like the best way to tell a story. And then there's other, you know, instances where having the consideration of a larger global audience is you know, also like something to consider too. Which brings me to my next point. You are about to embark on a really fantastic journey, I feel like, with the visibility, and just casting a wide net in terms of the show being able to reach a lot of new people with Netflix. What excites you most about that, and also just the storytelling that you've distilled through North of North?
Well, I mean, the first thing that we were kind of like throwing around pictures on our WhatsApp group yesterday between, you know, the two of us, Miranda, our producer and executive producer, and Anna, you know, she's got a billboard now in Times Square, like Anna Lam.
Yeah.
A little kid who grew up in Iqaluit, who worked with us when she was 16 on like the Grizzlies in a small little role, now has this like billboard in Times Square and it's just like
surreal.
Wow.
I can't even process words.
I don't like that's just us too, and we're not even like, you know, like Anna is she's gonna be a star. She is
incredible.
A star.
Yeah, no, it's so incredible, and also the fact that she, I think, from what I was reading, you know, didn't even intentionally set out to be an actor, and now.
Yeah.
Amazing. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. She took a little acting workshop for a Grizzlies movie that we did. And wasn't even sure she wanted to take the role, but we convinced her to do it. And here she is.
And then even after that, she was like, I'm going to go to university, like this acting thing, like whatever. No, I'm not going to do that. And yeah.
She's completely fallen in love, and she's so hardworking. She's such a dedicated actor. Like, she worked harder than anyone else on this production. She was in almost every single scene and just never complained. She's just such a joy. She's such a humble, grounded. She plays a character that's pretty messy and wild, but she, in real life, she is so put together and poised and eloquent, and like, just, she's such a wonderful, wonderful person, not just as an actor, but like just as a human being. And we're so lucky to have her represent Inuit and represent this show. I'm just so excited for her. And then just to circle back to your question there for a second, I love like Netflix's strategy right now of like finding really specific content from specific places and letting those communities create and speak for themselves, like are coming up with such incredible shows from all over the world. Like, you know, Korean cinema has blown up all over the world. And like, I'm so grateful for that. And like, I enjoy watching that stuff from other places. And I just hope that we can be another really great example of that model succeeding, that investing in people telling their own stories from their own communities all over the world is something that the globe wants to see, and that can be done incredibly well and make world-class television. And I just hope that we get to be a positive example of that.
We're really excited to see where this goes. We're nervous and excited and really hopeful. And yeah, we just...
That's the best mix of feelings.
Find an audience around the world.
Yes, 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 yes. It's good to be nervous and a little afraid sometimes. It means that you're living, I guess.
It's not boring.
Yeah. Just as my last question as we wrap up here, you know, do you see this as the start of a more large scale, like Indigenous productions, and, you know, kind of like what's next for Indigenous storytelling at this kind of scale?
Yeah, we hope that this is just the start. I mean, we really feel like Taika Waititi like kind of kicked us off globally. And then, you know, there's been Sterling with Reservation Dogs, and we've been just seeing more feature films and TV shows of all sizes, whether they're small or big like this. I think they all have their place and it's all worth it. So hopefully this is just the start of continued investment. And like we said in our careers, that people continue to take chances on the storytellers and the people who have a vision.
There's so much coming out. Like you know, I think a lot of Indigenous television happening right now is comedy, or, you know, especially in the comedy drama space, that I think we're, a lot of our shared experiences means that we're all kind of leaning in that direction and making really interesting content there. But I know there's also like one of our fellow Inuit filmmakers is super into horror, and you know, there's just, I can't wait to see people expanding into other genres that they're already in, but to get the level of support that we're getting for our show. I just know that there's so much untapped story and talent out there and fresh perspectives that the world's ready to see. So I'm eager to see that support expanding into all the other storytelling genres.
Yeah. Well, I think everyone is, or very many people are rooting for the show and rooting for you. And I think it's just so beautiful. And, you know, I stand by kind of what I think is that I think it is one of the most important shows on TV right now. So I hope you all your dreams are realized through it. And I really appreciate, you know, your time to chat today. I know you're very busy and embarking on a whole new journey. So very excited for you and really appreciate your time.
Thank you, Lance. It's so nice to meet you. Is that a dancing bear carving right behind you?
It is. Yeah.
That's so awesome.
No, it's been lovely spending time with you. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Stacey Alethea. That's a wrap on this episode of Mission Critical. If today's conversation gave you something to think about, do me a favor. Subscribe, leave a review, and share it with someone who needs to hear it. Big ideas are meant to be shared, and the best insights only matter if they're put into action. Until next time, stay sharp, stay curious, and go and make something happen. I'm Lance Chung, and this is Mission Critical.